Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Khayalethu Nodata from Old Mutual Investments and Mark Dutoy from Oyster Catcher Investments. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Mark, welcome to the show. You know, we've had a very interesting couple of trading days, with, you know, Friday being one of the biggest. I mean, we've seen those daily gains beating some of the daily gains into the recovery of 2020. I see today we're in the red in US markets, even though we had decent markets locally, mostly due to SA Inc. Where did we close locally, and where are we offshore, obviously? And what are some of the drivers that are driving this, you know, sort of dichotomy in the markets?
Thanks, Bryce. I mean, well, I guess to sum up the last few weeks, I guess the market is starting now to really price in the rising interest rate environment in the US. And coupled with that, I mean, we've seen a fairly soft earnings season out of the US. So a lot of the darling stocks really, you know, there's a lot of selling pressure and not many market participants willing to stand in and buy the dip. So we saw quite a lot of companies take really large knocks. These were typically the companies that had big earnings growth projections built into their share price, and you know, just a change in sentiment to say that, you know, we're probably not going to believe the high earnings growth numbers anymore, expecting the environment to be a little more tougher going forward with high interest rates and less growth. And then the market saying, well, in that kind of environment, you're not going to pay such a high multiple for these companies anymore. And really just no one stepping in to fill the selling orders. And so we saw big, large drops in April. And then a bit of a rebound on Friday. But I think that, you know, this is a kind of a bear market rally, or it was on Friday.
Yeah.
And these are typically short-lived in this type of environment.
I mean, some of the businesses, you know, that had massive promise of not just future profits, but future revenues. You know, a company that comes to mind when I think of this is Virgin Galactic, which has the share called Space. That company, is pre-revenues. I still don't understand why it's listed. And I mean, in the spec space, there's plenty of those businesses. Maybe in some of the businesses that do have revenues, you know, a company that comes to mind, for example, in the meme stock era is Palantir and maybe Beyond Meat, which has gross margins of 0.2%. You know, the market definitely, I think, is pricing those correctly, and maybe they're due for even bigger drops than what we've seen. But when it comes to companies like, for example, a Facebook or, you know, Meta Platforms, which is what they call themselves today, it sort of takes me to, you know, back in 2013, 2014, you know, post Steve Jobs, Apple, where, you know, the thing was trading at a PE of eight and, you know, with cash of north of $80 billion. But everyone was saying, you know, this is a bad business. It was trading cheaper than tobacco stocks, which is what we're seeing with Meta. So what are your thoughts on the businesses that actually do have revenues and are highly profitable, but they've been beaten down, you know, in tandem with the likes of Palantir's, the Beyond Meat of this world?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a kind of a wholesale rotation out of growth stocks into more value-related stocks, which is kind of the typical playbook when interest rates are rising. And you're right, there are some great companies like Meta or Facebook that have been carried out along with the tide. So it's difficult because in the kind of medium term, there's nothing to say that the share price has to recover. Yeah. So you might have to, you know, hold and kind of have a bit of conviction to stay long in your Facebook holdings. But I mean, I do, you know, it is a great company. It's got a fantastic user base, I mean, which it can still monetize even further. And Mark Zuckerberg has actually, you know, he's built an incredible business. He's still there. So it is one that actually I like for the longer term. But, you know, in the next couple of months, there's no saying that you're going to get a big rally.
Of course, the next couple of months, no one knows what's going to happen, right? So let's jump into some of our questions here. We've got one on coronation from Malan, who says, do you think the coronation current dividend yield of 12% is sustainable, which would make it a very attractive income investment? Your thoughts on the dividend yield of coronation?
Yeah, so, I mean, coronation being an asset management business, they pay out 100% of their earnings, and the earnings are going to be based on, one, what their asset base is, because they charge annual fee, and two, what the performance fee is. So you really, when you're looking at that dividend yield, it will fluctuate based on their performance. And when markets are falling, typically asset management businesses are high beta stocks, so they will fall as much or even more so than the market, because a lot of their revenue is derived from asset base. So I think that this is a difficult environment for coronation. Also, they are a very large asset manager, and it's more difficult for them to generate alpha in these types of markets. And I think that's why you've seen the share price under pressure. I mean, having said that, it has come down a lot already. And so we're not sure what, you know, exactly if that's all baked into the price yet. So I think for us, we're not buying coronation yet. Okay. We still think there might be further downside.
Okay, interesting. Their thoughts on coronation. Kyle is here, has joined us. Hello, Kyle.
Good evening.
Yebo. We've got a question on African Rainbow Capital here from Ann Tutoy, so no relation there, Mark. They're asking if, you know, ARC or ARC is massively undervalued, or, you know, if you had to put a realistic valuation on their investment in TymeBank, as, you know, South Africa's fastest growing bank, what does that look like, essentially? I'll start with you, Kaya.
Firstly, thank you for that. Think about the investment in TymeBank itself and the customer acquisition. If you're looking at South Africa and the drive to drive fees down, TymeBank is very well positioned, and ARC being the driver behind that, I do think there's value there. Even when you look at our overall banking sector, we've seen, over the past 2 years, those have been at long-term lows in terms of valuation. So quite a lot of upside on that. So when you look at ARC and you extend, just looking at the banking sector overall, that is undervalued, albeit it has rebounded. I think over long term, you do want to think about, the price to book, what can TymeBank realistically achieve? Where are they going to take market share from? And you look at that and you say, there is value there. How do they unlock it? Over time, as the investment matures, I think that value will become unlocked. And the case, I would say it is undervalued. Probably won't stick to a number, but there is upside in TymeBank at this stage, in our view.
You're smiling, Mark. Do you have, you know, differing thoughts?
I think I was just thinking the reason we haven't been investing in ARC until now is that it's got quite a complicated management structure and quite an expensive management fee. And it is currently under review, and they are going to present a revised fee to the market. So we're waiting to see what that comes out at. But principally, I do agree that if you add some of their assets together, you know, the ARC company is undervalued at the share price. But a lot depends on what that management fee structure is going to be going forward.
Okay, so you're saying basically once that management fee, which is something we've been talking about on the show quite a lot, once that's been released, we should see some value unlock there. And obviously, there's been management fee accrued, and obviously there's been ways they were trying to, you know, extract money from the company, but shareholders were not very happy about that. So that just sits there and earns interest, you know, for the owners. which is again frowned upon. So I guess maybe they want to issue out more shares to unlock that, and maybe not take the cash. I don't know, because you don't want to cripple a business that's an investment business, you know, by taking its cash. But else, also at the same time, you're seeing that, you know, interest is ticking over, which is, you know, not what you want to see. We've got a question here on Long for Life. So I guess, Kai, I'll skip you here. But Mark, Long for Life, what's going to happen now if I'm holding Long for Life? So I think that's the question from Gavin Pistorius. Sorry.
Yeah, the offer price, I think, is R6.20. So
correct.
If you hold your stock on the day it delists, you will have R6.20 paid into your account, and then you can decide where to redeploy that money. Obviously, there might be tax consequences for you depending on what price you paid for the share and how long you held it for. If you held it for 3 years or more, then you're going to pay capital gains on your profits. Otherwise, you're going to pay income tax on your profits. But essentially, you're going to get the cash R6.20 for the shares that you own.
Okay. Okay, fantastic. I think we should ask the question about Vodacom and their stance on raising some capital, you know, through a bond issuance, you know, to fund partially, you know, their growth in Egypt. What did you make of that, Kaya? We've seen the share price was down today.
So today, Vodacom did come out with an announcement in terms of results announcements today.
Yes.
So that was in line with what they had previously guided. But if you think of that in the context of MTN last week, who came out with quite some strong numbers, the reaction in terms of share price, albeit short term, there was a positive sort of surprise from MTN, and Vodacom came out with today's numbers. When you think of the actual deal they have for Egypt and also CIVH here in South Africa, they are going after a higher growth region, raising capital. They're highly cash generative. They have to spend on their capex for spectrum going forward to continue to fund their growth here in South Africa.
Yeah.
But when you talk about the prospects for Egypt, that's quite a high growth, a high potential growth region. That they will enter, raising capital in order to fund that. It is sensible. I think that does make sense. And I actually think that investment itself will pay itself off over a long term, as soon as Vodacom gets going there and effectively monetizing that ecospace. I think
I have further follow-up questions, Kaya. The shareholder base, I could argue, of you know, something like a Vodacom is that they like the business because it's commodity-like. You can almost model it, you know, its earnings by making a few assumptions. And they liked it because it was a high-yielding company. But now, you know, moving from 90% of, you know, earnings in terms of paying it dividends out into 75% and funding growth with the difference makes it a totally different company, obviously. You know, I could argue a growing company at this point, not just any commodity. Doesn't that it disadvantage, you know, itself by doing that? And, you know, what does it mean for the shareholder base in the interim?
Well, thank you for that. So just to continue with that, the fact that you're saying that you're reducing your dividend in order to fund a higher growth trajectory going forward, as a shareholder, I'd be quite excited about that if I am actually happy with where the investment is actually going to go to.
Yeah.
So funding a higher growth region with quite a lot of potential unlock in terms of value is something that, as a shareholder, Vodacom has explained it reasonably well in terms of what the plan is, what the outlook is, and how much they understand the market in Egypt. And as a shareholder, it's a matter of saying, do I think that investment is good going forward? And what price have they paid for it? So looking at that and looking at that as a shareholder, the core business in South Africa and the rest of Africa that's currently within Vodacom, that doesn't change. Those are mature businesses, some of those. and they continue to generate cash and are self-funding and self-sufficient. Reducing the dividend at this stage to invest behind growth is an exciting prospect, I would think. But they haven't cut the dividend to zero. You're still getting something.
So the pensioners can you know, be patient and wait for the growth to show itself, right? Mark, naturally, when I see something like this, I want to ask, you know, looking at competition, obviously, what does the Vodacom management know that the MTN management doesn't know? Because, I mean, when it comes to executing in Africa, I would rate the MTN management on the, you know, top tier there in comparison. I mean, if you look at their strategies, sort of streamlining, you know, regions that didn't work out, whether it's Africa or Middle East, and listing some of those businesses where they've been ultra successful, you know, to have locals to participate in the share price and, you know, the success, and obviously raising a lot of cash to pay down debt, to de-risk the balance sheet, to use, you know, the accounting term. What does the Vodacom management know that these guys at MTN don't know, and which one now has better prospects, you know, for long-term investors between the two? Because, I mean, it's becoming very interesting now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, I mean, Vodacom is basically saying that their current growth, they've run out of current growth options, which I think the market generally understood. And, you know, they're looking now at new geographies. So there's always risk that comes with acquisitions. And I think that they're kind of now in a different space to MTN, because MTN has had these Africa growth stories for a while, and they're actually in the process now of unlocking value for shareholders. So, like you said, paying down their big US dollar based debt at the center. So, very different stories now between the two companies. I mean, on our numbers, we prefer MTN over Vodacom, and you know, the new kind of change in strategy we'll have to see, but. You know, obviously, with any kind of acquisition, there's always risk, and often large acquisitions don't work out as the spreadsheet would hope.
Yeah, and any closing remarks, Kaya?
I mean, it is inherent that there's risk. I do agree with Mark on that. And the other thing to mention is also navigating the regulatory environment in different geographies is also something to consider. So. The growth story comes with some risk, as you'd expect.
Okay, fantastic. We got a question on email from Franz Engelbrecht, who says, please, can the panel comment on Discovery's fall from grace the last month or so? Should I keep holding my shares? Thanks for the panel's valuable input, as always. Mark?
Well, you're asking on rates.
Discovery.
Oh, on Discovery. Yeah, so Discovery has had quite a large pullback now. And, you know, I do suspect that part of it is because it is one of the stocks that's owned by that US growth ETF, ARK, and that they've also been under a lot of pressure. So perhaps putting more pressure on Discovery shares as well. The share price has come off a lot, but It's one of the few stories in South Africa that still has a decent growth story attached to it. So it's got Discovery Bank, which they've rolled out and is growing quite nicely. And then they've got their big growth story in China with their Ping An JV. There was a lot of nervousness at one stage in the market about Discovery not having enough cash and perhaps having to do a capital raise in order to fund growth. I think those concerns have largely subsided.
Okay.
And you know, we've seen a big pullback in the share price, and I would say it's an opportunity to buy if you like the stock.
Okay, fantastic. So he shouldn't be selling his shares that he already owns. Any thoughts, any further thoughts, Kaya?
No, I won't add there, other than over the past month, you must really think, I mean, the volatility we've seen in the past probably 2 or 3 months in the market. You just need to try and look through that almost as far as possible, going back to the fundamentals as Mark has highlighted.
Yeah, okay, so I like that. I guess a follow-up question would be to ask you about interest rates and how it's going to affect that business, but we don't want to talk about one company for too long. We've got a question from Saad Larry, who says, hi, could you please ask the panel's views on Kap Agri? Kaya, do you follow Kap Agri?
Yes, I do. I mean, I saw the results that came out last week.
Yes.
A stellar set of results, very strong numbers, but some of the things I've warned about is pretty much the soft commodities, which we know about. They will benefit from, like, we've had a record wheat crop in South Africa, and maize crop rather. So there is some of that benefit, but there actually are some costs that are there where you expect the feed through from the revenue growth that they get to actually drop down to the bottom line. But there are some costs attached to that, and the leverage is not that as straightforward as you would expect. So I'd say they came out with very strong numbers, as you'd expect, but just look below the line just to understand what else is in the cost line. They are good at controlling costs, but there's quite a lot of volatility there. And yeah, they navigate that reasonably well.
A solid, management there when it comes to execution. Your thoughts, Mark, on Kap Agri?
Yeah, we don't, I don't follow it that closely. I think agricultural businesses are tough businesses to own, kind of, a very, very much boom and bust. Maybe not bust, hopefully, but, difficult commodity cycles to navigate. It's not a business that we're particularly excited about.
Okay, so it's not in your radar. We have a question here from Koketso about Google. It says, is it a good business to buy at these levels? Mark?
No, I don't know. I can't comment on it.
Well, so you don't follow Google much. Kaya, you don't follow Google either?
Google, no.
Okay, let me scroll down here. We've got a question about the US dollar. Says the US dollar index is quite high at the moment. Do your guests perhaps have any thoughts on the future direction of the dollar? We've actually never been asked, currency related questions. So this is from Nico. Do you guys have any thoughts on the dollar? Mark?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what we're seeing now is typical when there's pressure in equity markets. Capital goes to the safest place, which is the US dollar. There's a lot of debate as to whether the US dollar will kind of hold on to its safe haven or global currency status going forward. And I think that the current market sell-off and resultant increase in the US dollar has shown that it still is the world currency. I do think, though, that what's being priced in now is the current rate hike cycle. A lot of it should be priced. I mean, it's difficult to see if the Fed will go faster than what they have indicated. I think it's unlikely that they will. And so I think that the dollar, the strong dollar, kind of has done what it's going to do. And I think from here, we'll probably see a moderation going forward.
Look, it's always hard to make calls about these things, especially if someone doesn't articulate why they're asking whether the dollar is going to remain strong or weak. Am I trying to send rands offshore? Am I trying to bring dollars back home? What's the story? Kaya, so I'm not going to ask you about the hard question about the dollar. We've got a question about Alviva before I take your stock picks for the evening. Do you follow Alviva?
I don't follow Alviva that closely, unfortunately.
Okay, Mark?
Well, I mean, both Alviva and Mustek, the two, I mean, they supply computer hardware components.
Yes.
Alviva has a much stronger growth story to it. They've had fantastic results over the last 2 years. Everyone's been needed to replace their PCs, all the work from home. People had to buy new laptops, new devices. So they've really had fantastic results. They've had a lot of pricing power in this environment. You know, going forward from here, you would expect that pricing type of environment to moderate a bit. But given the kind of current chip shortage, maybe it lasts a bit longer. Not a stock that I'm buying at the moment, but,
okay,
you know, they're decent and well-run small-cap businesses.
Okay, fantastic. I'll take your stock pick for the evening, Kaya.
My stock pick is Raubex. Actually quite excited about that. They came out with trading update, or at least results today. I mean, they've grown, I think it's 200% in terms of earnings over the reporting period, which was ahead of what we would have expected as well. So that's very positive. Strong order book, and they're executing on that. It's a South African construction, roads, construction, infrastructure business. And I think they have a growth path that's, when you look at all the volatility we've seen in the market, they've got a growth path that is quite exciting, I would say. They've got tenders that are now finally being awarded. The government is spending also in renewables as well, so we've got some exposure there.
Yeah.
And mining activity being higher, that also provides a bit of an underpin there. Strong management team. There's been a leadership change, but the continuity is, I mean, we back that. And the balance sheet is strong, so they can execute against the order book, which is at record levels, I must say. They can execute against the order book that they have secured so far, in our view. So we quite like Raubex on our side.
So you're going with Raubex. Mark, your pick for the evening.
Yeah, so I'm picking Absa tonight. Absa has had a 14% correction in share price since the end of March, partly because of the increase in load shedding in South Africa again and the weaker rand, but also because Barclays placed 7% of its remaining stake in the market, which pushed the Absa share price down a bit. They've got their new CEO in place, Ari Rautenbach. He's an internal candidate or internal appointment to the role. He's a, you know, safe pair of hands for the business, and he knows what needs to be done. And on our numbers, you're going to get a 17% return per year for maybe the next 4 years, and 8% of that in dividends. It's well capitalized, and the recent regulatory returns are out, and lending's growing at about 6.5%, which is in line with our numbers, and so we're quite confident on our projections.
Okay, so two SA Inc. stocks, Absa and Raubex. I like those very much. Thank you very much, gents. Thanks to my guest, Kayale to No Data from Old Mutual Investments and Mark Dutoy from Oyster Catcher Investments. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a good evening.